Yeah. Personality of Godhead, Vishvashrik, the creator of the universe, Atmajoni, self-sufficient, Etat, all these, Cha, also, Na, unto us, Varnaya, describe, Vipravarya, O chief amongst the Brahmanas. Translation and purport by the divine grace of Issi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O chief amongst the Brahmanas, please also describe how Narayan, the creator of the universe and the self-sufficient Lord, has differently created the natures, activities, forms, features, and names of the different living creatures. Please repeat, O chief amongst the Brahmanas.
O chief amongst the Brahmanas.
Please also describe how Narayan, the creator of the universe and the self-sufficient Lord, has differently created the natures, activities, forms, features, and names of the different living creatures. Purport. Every living being is under the plan of his natural inclinations in terms of the modes of nature. His work is manifested in terms of the nature of the three modes. His form and bodily features are designed according to his work, and his name is designated according to his bodily features. For example, the higher classes of men are white, Shukla, and the lower classes of men are black. This division of white and black is in terms of one's white and black duties of life. Pious acts lead one to take birth in a good and highly placed family, to become rich, to become learned, and to acquire beautiful bodily features. Impious acts lead one to become poor by parentage, to be always in want, to become a fool or illiterate, and to acquire ugly bodily features. Vidura requested Maitreya to explain these differences between all the living creatures made by Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Interesting purport. We're conditioned by our cultural environment to see things in black and white. So this is, we can see the evolution of the theory here with regards to this seeming, in one sense, social taboo, you know, but this is all on a material level. So just as beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so in this way, the word here, varnaya, describe which is different, says describe. But varna has as its root color. So there is a difference here between the material and the spiritual, and Prabhupada alludes to that with regards to the good and evil aspect of these color descriptions. So we have a tendency sometimes to unnecessarily speculate or postulate, you know, between the various scriptural references, because we're sitting here very comfortable, you know, in 2024, and we've had so many experiences in our personal lives. And it's difficult at times to overcome some of these conditionings. But by Prabhupada's mercy, and even from the very beginning, we saw that Radha Govinda, my first deities, you can say, are Ishta Devatas. And so when I came and saw their lordships, I was a little confused as to why they were in this black and white configuration. The Supreme Personality of God, of course, I was quite impressed. I thought the devotees are very liberal in this regard. But I was, just in my neophyte, I had thought, coming from my background in Oriental philosophy, I was familiar with yin and yang. And yin and yang are these opposites also that make the whole. And they're also black and white. So I was attributing this to that in my, of course, I was quickly corrected. In those days, we were not afraid to speak, to question, but there was always so many nice devotees who would eagerly correct us, actually, including Pushkar and Archita, and all the devotees who were there on the press, were very studied in the philosophy, ready to right all our misconceptions about such things. So this was another misconception, taken from the Bali concept of life, that there's a difference in through ethnic or cultural assignments, so to speak. But as we became more, as we understood more of the philosophy, we quickly grasped the essence and set aside the superficial. And that was it, allowed us to progress without conflict or confrontation. This is a, nowadays, everything is about division. It's not just today. This is since time immemorial, divide and conquer. So people are always looking for some way to separate everyone into categories so that they fight. So this is a common ploy. And devotees, of course, should be free from such contaminations. Right? Isn't that, what's that verse? Well, that one's there also, but free from all material misconceptions and and mental speculation. But anyway, yes, like that. So we have this tendency, and we're trying to progress, but at times we have to confront ourselves, even in our current situation, so that we're seeing things through the eyes of Shastra. So one thing, when I was reading today, they have very nice the Prabhupada sayings. Of course, I don't have the internet here, but we can, there was a very nice in for the 16th. So January 16th, 1977. So Prabhupada says, you can do all kinds of opposition. This is a conversation in Calcutta. You can do all kinds of opposition, but we shall go forward. The caravan will pass. You may bark. So take all these things as Krishna's mercies and engage more enthusiastically. Why should we be defeated? So this conversation, it actually has a lot of the what we identify as Srila Prabhupada's fighting spirit. There's a chapter in Lilamrita in volume 6 that says, chant Hare Krishna and fight. So it's in this conversation that he says that. If anyone wants to look through that, if you have the internet, January 16th, 1977, Room Conversation of Calcutta. And the title of it is Book Scores 1976. And we just have to mention that at that time, many of us who were here now were in New York. And New York was the highest score. We were number one in the world at that time. Radha Damodar, TSKP, and ISKCON New York were one, you know, by the arrangement of Srila Prabhupada and Tamal Krishna and many others. So so that's the title of it, Room Conversation on 1976 Book Scores. But in there is this particular excerpt, and further down is that point where Prabhupada says, right after that little anecdote, chant Hare Krishna and fight. So this is something that we always have to keep in mind, that when we're confronted with seeming conflicts, you know, between our understanding of the philosophy and the actual presentation of the philosophy by the pure devotee, that we should seek reconciliation by going deeper into our own misconceptions. Not that we try to exploit some misconception for our own personal whatever, aggrandizement, profit, distinction, adoration. And of course, that is a tendency. We have a guy in New York, Ratiachi, comes every year, and he passes out cards, and he calls himself an Aryan. And he's all about the distinction. So this is the way you can get a real clear appreciation of someone who's totally misunderstood the philosophy. And we kind of move him away from the main crowd and push him to the periphery. But it's a public square. Anybody can come and anybody can do. And he's dressed as a devotee. But he's passing out these cards, they're emblazoned with swastikas, and, you know, he'll grab anybody he can find and start talking about this whole misconception. So this is where we want to make sure that everyone appreciates how Prabhupada has clarified, you know, beyond any doubt, but somehow or other, if someone wants to take the wrong thing, then, matter of fact, the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada in person in 1975 in Henry Street, we had just finished building the Vyasa Sangha. We were up basically all night putting the finishing touches on the Vyasa Sangha. And so there's no way we could sit down and hear class. We would just fall asleep. So those of us who were up late, we were standing. I was standing to Prabhupada's left in one corner, which is the preferred corner for standing, by the way. Anyone remembers that corner? Yeah, because it wasn't by the entrance. It was away. Prabhupada's left was in the corner away from the door. So I was listening, and then at some certain point, and it's a very nice verse in the second canon, and Prabhupada, and everyone has this experience, and you know, it's not necessarily something that unique to me, but he was talking, and he glanced over, and he said, if you want to pick up something nice, something good, first you have to put the dirty thing down that you're holding in your hand. And he goes like that, and he looked right at me. So I said, uh-oh. This is the challenge. Put down the dirty thing. And what are those dirty things? Those anarthas. That's Sarvapada Vinirmukham Tatpalakwinanimura. That we have to rise above these misconceptions, up to that level of Shuddha Sattva, that where knowledge can actually take place. Someone who is professing to have knowledge but he's not acting in the mode of goodness, then he's cheating himself and he's cheating others, so he's pretending. And we've seen this time and again by a person's character, you know, whether or not he's someone who can present the philosophy in a manner that's suitable to propagate the mission according to Srila Prabhupada's desires. There's many who want to preach, but as it's described, some are not ready to preach. They need more purification. They need more pot washing. anyone needs to set aside his troubles, go wash Krishna's pots. That'll refocus you. That's the restart button. That'll put you and recenter you. It's like you have on the maps when you're driving. Sometimes you have to hit the button that says recenter because you're sort of like in the middle of nowhere. You know, you don't see your icon for your vehicle. You hit recenter and all of a sudden you're back on that path. It's not uncommon to have controversy. And Prabhupada was dealing with it in such an amazing way, you know, including in purports like this, you know, where he would show that he was not afraid to speak the truth, but you had to be able to understand it. And that was his challenge. That are you ready to hear what I have to say with the proper mood and purified mentality? And there are so many things. I mean, you know, what to speak of, no intoxication, no meeting, no illicit sex, no gambling. And that's just the beginning. Forget about color differentiations. I mean, what about that? What about celibacy in every respect? Who is up for that? You know, we're fortunate that in New York, we have a huge audience and people are coming and again joining. And as in a so-called urban environment that's hellish to say the least, every day people are being killed, assaulted, pushed on the subway tracks. And we have no choice. This is our Prabhupada Das. This is where we have to be in order to present the message. So every day they're going out without fail, 7, 10, 12 hours a day chanting the holy name and passing out thousands of mantra cards, and people are again joining the temple. So we have to be prepared for that. If we're ready to do this, people are ready to come. That's what Krishna is showing us. Matter of fact, our ashram, like the old days, we started off, there was 5 or 6 people in the ashram. And as it increased, and everybody had a very nice, comfortable situation if you were there. Everybody had your own room, you know, no problems like that. And then there was 2 people, 3 people, 4 people, 6 people, you know, and more, and then the bunk beds have to come in. And so this is how it progresses. This is how we started when we bought the temple. We had bunk beds. We had a lot of devotees. And so Krishna is doing this again. He's actually challenging us. Are you ready? Because there's unlimited souls who want to become Krishna conscious. Are you ready to accept them? And so this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to make some facility. And we're begging Krishna, like in Henry Street. Henry Street was 2 brownstones together. It was tiny. Temple room was 15 feet wide. Temple room, 15 feet wide. You know, by 60 feet long. It's hard to imagine when you're not, you know, but. And we had 130 devotees. 130 devotees. Sleeping everywhere you could possibly sleep. Closets, stairwell landing, everywhere. And then somehow or other, Krishna made the arrangements for us to get 55th Street. And as soon as we got 55th Street, the population increased from 130 to 230. So this is something that, and we've seen this in Alachua. In Alachua, when the temple first opened, I mean, temple opened and had a long run as a farm project. That was very nice. And devotees were trying to live close to the land and farm with the oxen. And these devotees were very sincere in their efforts. But somehow or other, due to time and circumstances, the temple, like the fields around it, became fallow. But then somehow or other, by the mercy of devotees, who are looking to settle down, raise children, get land. This became the largest community outside of India. And that, it's amazing how that transpired. And there's so many reasons you can say, the schools, the land, or this, or that, the other thing. Possibly get some maha water. Thank you. I saw that nice maha water container, but I didn't think to bring a cup in with me. That was my mistake. And so Krishna is ever expanding, and we have to keep up, just like when devotees would go on the morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. Everyone knows how tall Srila Prabhupada was on his green card. We have Prabhupada's green card in the museum in New York. Anyone wants to come and see it, issued in Canada in 1968. And it has Prabhupada's height. It says 5'4". 5 foot four, thank you. But nobody ever saw Srila Prabhupada as a small person. Ask anyone. And when Prabhupada was walking in the morning walk, everyone had to double time to keep up with him. Everyone had to double time. And I don't think there were any devotees who were 5'4". It was just whatever. But Prabhupada was much larger than life for various reasons. Most of all because of his spiritual, Vaikuntha, aristocratic personality. He was beyond the temporal constraints of size, dimension, things like that. It just wasn't there. So there's no limitation. And Prabhupada, of course, is speaking, coming. And America, and at that time, when you said India, what conjured up is people who are starving. This is our misconceptions. This is how it was presented. This is how India was demonized, in one sense. The storehouse of love of Godhead was minimized due to different cultural prejudices. So we have an opportunity to challenge ourselves at every turn, to rise above, not just these petty misunderstandings based on bodily conception, but to see what is the real nature here of the interaction of karma and how it produces these 8,400,000 species of life, many of which are not on this planet. And people forget this is a big universe, and there are many planets, and there are, just like we have descriptions of the lower, and they call them the lower heavenly planets, but they're in the realm, and they have the names that are ascribed to them in other places as the hellish planets. But yet these are places which are, in one sense, described as very advanced technologically. But they're inhabited by people who are in the category of demons. It's like there's only two real classes of people. And when we see and we read, we have to keep that in mind, that there's only devotees and demons. Of course, this is another taboo for public preaching. We learned about this in early days. We don't say that, all the karmi. We don't even use the word karmi anymore. Not that. Amongst ourselves, yes. Because we need to have that differentiation. It's a necessary point in our, informal conversations. Because it is a classification. It is a reality. It's just not something that you speak to for preaching purposes. But yes, there are demons. Anyone who doesn't think that there are demons is not looking hard enough, or he's living under a rock. Okay? In New York, we see them up close and personal every single day. You're out in a hurry now. And there's a way to beat those persons. One of the Sacred Time devotees was challenged by one guy who came over in the subway, because in the wintertime we're chanting in the subway. And we have a small amplifier. You know, because the subway is noisy, lots of things going on. And we want the Maha Mantra to cut through those modes of material nature. And so there's one big guy comes over and he's screaming. Says, "It's too loud! It's too loud!" It's screaming and screaming. "It's too loud, too loud." One of the devotees ran up to him and hugged him. Because he was getting a little, it seemed like he was going to get a little violent. And this is the nature of the devotee. The devotee went up and hugged him and invited him over. We have prasadam at, you know, where they distribute. Sometimes it's simple, sometimes it's, we make delicious cookies, and if the cookies run out, then we always have lollipops, organic lollipops, like the old days when we used to offer candy canes during Christmas time. So we have lollipops. And his whole demeanor changed. He came over, he started chatting with the devotees. He stayed for a long time. He eventually took a book. We garlanded him, because we always take Maha garlands from the temple, bring them out for special people. He became a special person. So this is how we need to address, you know, this, like Prabhupada said, they're barking, but it shouldn't affect us. That's, you know, that takeaway from the conversation on this day in 1977. That the dogs may bark. And then if necessary, if possible, you change their hearts. Because that's what this whole process is about, is changing everyone's heart. And then they're no longer seeing things like they were materially, black and white. Now they see things according to the modes of nature, very clearly. They see that this person has been affected by the modes of material change. It's not necessarily his fault, but we understand from the philosophy that karma is there. And it will determine your birth and circumstances. And we can't ignore that. Why is one person born and in this family and another person born in that family? Why is one person born in this country and another person born in that country? No, this is all karma. Why is it such a high birth, one who is fortunate to take birth in Bharatvarsha? Who can deny that? Although, like I said, people would demonize India. They would say it's just, it's a third world country. Not even third world, fourth world, fifth world. Nothing good about it. That's how people used to try to push down. Why? Because that's Maya, trying to keep this knowledge out of the wrong hands. And unfortunately, the one person who was capable with the, in the right hands brought it to America. And that changed everything. So this is how we can understand things historically, socially, from every aspect. You know, how this movement has given us everything. In order to push on this Sankirtan mission. It hasn't given us everything just so that we can, you know, what's that famous, can we all live together? No, it's not that. It's not the kumbaya type of situation. No, there's going to be situations where you have to exert the philosophy. Sometimes sweetly, sometimes forcefully. But you can never be shy about it. This is the point. We don't try to disguise it. You know, this is not... Prabhupada was a bold preacher. He wasn't afraid to speak the truth. If anyone spoke truth to power, it was Srila Prabhupada. His movement has shaken up the entire world. People just don't know it yet. They've only seen a small fraction of it in the last few years. But this is the revolution that people are hoping for eventually to come to pass. That everyone will be on the same philosophical page. One book, Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita. One book. Right? But you know, for the sake of preaching, sometimes we try to accommodate others. But only to the extent when there's an opening to reveal the truth to them. So that strategy is there, and it will probably remain there for some time due to circumstances. But we should never practice being shy. We should always practice being bold in our preaching. And then, if necessary, you can adjust according to time and circumstances. If someone is not ready to hear, we already know what the philosophy is. You don't speak to that person. They'll commit offenses. They'll create a situation. So prasadam is still the secret weapon in New York. You know, we've quite a struggle to recover after COVID in the city. We had, we lost, you know, before 2020, there's huge downtown Brooklyn, there's thousands and thousands of offices, federal, state, city, private, and so many people used to come for lunch to Govindas. As soon as COVID hit, everybody went remote. There was no more lunch crowd. They shut the restaurant down for 3 months. The city couldn't open. Tried every which way around it, couldn't do it. And it's never recovered. But, you know, somehow or other, there's still Krishna. We never closed, except for that time when the inspectors came and physically shut us down. We opened up as soon as we could under the guise of a private club. So that is how we function today, essentially, so that we can get around certain restrictions. And people, of course, are now coming back. The fear of that period of time, which who knows how it would be written in history, has somewhat subsided. People are realizing that, you know, they shouldn't be ruled by fear. And so they're coming back to the restaurant more and more. All the restaurants in the neighborhood are also filling up. So we're encouraged that, again, it's coming back. These things, for whatever reason, Krishna has a purpose. Gave us time to do renovations, consolidate some areas. We humbly invite everyone, if they get a chance, to come to Rathiatri. And then we'll be happy to give you a tour of all the holy places in New York. Ram Roy Puru is very well learned in this field, and he takes all the devotees around. And you'll see places that, every place in Prabhupada Lilamrita, and some that are always constantly being discovered. So there's, and then you will get a chance to see what's going on in New York and what the preaching is like in an urban environment in New York City. Where at one point, there were so many books distributed, I just want you to, if people get a chance to read what the scores are for that time period. We're talking hundreds of thousands of books and millions of dollars. Hundreds of thousands of books. So it's not that the potency of this movement has been lost somewhere, just like Arjuna lamented that now that Krishna's gone, he was attacked by the cowherds, and you know, this is the same Gandiva bull. You know, what's going on? He was relying on certain aspects, but essentially it's because of forgetfulness of Krishna, in one sense. You know, we could say that, yes, Arjuna had so much intimate, but there's a lesson there. And so that we have to keep Krishna always in the center. No one is more famous for deity worship than ISKCON. No one. Everyone has imitated ISKCON. We have a huge temple that came up in New Jersey, from Swami Narayan. We asked some of their tour guides, because they don't advertise it as a temple. As a mandir. They advertise it as a temple. It's all about the architecture. It's nothing about the deities or about Krishna. Nothing. We took a tour at the opening. We were personally invited. And we asked them, you know, this is all recent. Before, you know, 30 years ago, there were no Swaminarayan temples, nothing. Whereas, what was your inspiration? And you know what their inspiration was? Anybody know? Somebody must know, yeah. New Vrindavan, the palace of gold. That was their inspiration, to go on this temple building marathon. They were so impressed by Prabhupada's prowess, by the dedication and devotion, and the fact that the devotees built it themselves, that they pride themselves that their temples are all built by volunteers, you know, under the guidance of, you know, engineers and whatnot, but all built by volunteers, self-built. That's their whole thing. Because they saw the devotees do it. So this is the influence that Srila Prabhupada has had, you know, whether he was physically present or not. So in the same way, we keep Prabhupada's momentum, his mood and his mission alive. And then there's no question that this movement can only thrive. But sacrifices are required. So that's, you know, that New York is a special place. And the and everyone who knows, who served there, has that feeling in their heart. As a matter of fact, I don't mind saying, and I'm not shy about it, Prabhupada had one deity photo in his room in Mayapur. When he finished there, Prabhupada stays in the Lotus Building there. So there's amazing that his, and everyone's seen his bedroom, very small. Prabhupada didn't have a suite. He didn't take up the whole floor, you know, of the building. He had a shared bathroom. Of course, when Prabhupada was there, you know, his toilet has a door, a lock on it. And, you know, when he was there, it was locked. But basically, it was a shared bathroom, you know, for other devotees living in the building at that time. So the first time I went to Mayapur, I noticed in Prabhupada's room, no pictures. Some pictures on his desk in the main room like that. He had these teak carvings on the wall in the sitting room. But the only picture hanging on the wall was a picture of Radha Govinda. From when for almost after they would move to Brooklyn, after they were installed in Henry Street. So this is for us, we feel a deep connection. We feel Prabhupada's connection to Radha Govinda. And so that gives us the strength to carry on under, you know, whatever conditions. Personally, I think New York is a great place, and I have anybody wants to come. It's not just a great place to visit, it's a great place to live and preach. You know, but so if you get tired of being out in the country and you want some action and activity, by all means, please come and preach in New York City. We have room. We have room for everyone. So I guess the time is getting late there. We want to have some time to take questions. Yeah, I see Mother Gautamaka was quick. She had her hand up first and then wanted to be after that.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your dedication to your Prabhu Dr. Desh. You mentioned newly discovered pastime places of Srila Prabhupada. Can you name some or say?
Well, I mean, everyone knows those pastimes in Leelamrita, but Prabhupada's daily routine was that he would walk everywhere. And some of these areas that he, in the military, it's called reconnoiter. You go out and you look where is a good place to speak or preach or perform Harinam. Of course, we all know that Harinam started in Tompkins Square Park. That was there. But when Prabhupada was still living at, you know, either in the office at Broadway or with Dr. Mishra, he would walk mostly on the west side. So one nice photo is Prabhupada at Columbus Circle. So that's one of our preaching, when it's good weather, Columbus Circle is one of the most, is one of the best places for Harinam to sit down and to reach the people. We have Washington Square Park, Union Square, Columbus Circle.
Bryant Park.
Bryant Park, we don't preach so much yet because they're kind of not very much, people have to come in off. At Columbus Circle, there's thousands of people walking by you. Same with Union Square, same with Washington Square.
I think you walk in by.
Yeah, we're doing sitting hard now. We only do sit for now. We do walking at the evening. When they're finished, they'll get up and they'll walk. If they're at Times Square, they'll walk at Times Square. You know, if Union Square, they'll stand up. Huh?
No, and probably there's pictures of him walking in Bali, and it looks like Bryant Park.
No, that one is Bryant Park, yes, for sure. You see the big window. I used to work there. I know that. Those are the windows.
But does he take people there?
To the stacks. We take them there. Nice photo there.
Prospect Park, he's walking with the lake behind
him. Prospect Park at the lake in Brooklyn. Yes, these are all known. Columbus Circle, is just, we see Prabhupada walking there. We understand that these are places that have a point of reference for us. That we know that Prabhupada walked everywhere. Plus he was on all so many buses, and so many different areas. And you see him on the train. And so we feel very comfortable preaching in New York because we feel Prabhupada was doing all this and setting the tone for us. And he wasn't afraid. New York was always a scary place, especially for an elderly gentleman. In one sense, but he was fearless. And Tompkins Square Park is not a very nice place to preach now, because it's not filled with. It's mostly, if anyone is familiar with the situation in New York, there's an influx of people coming from other countries by hook or crook, we could say. And somehow or other, New York has had to take tens of thousands of them because it's a sanctuary city. And so they can't reject them. They can't move them anyplace else. And so their food for life, Adi Purush Puru, from New Vrindavan for many years, he does food for life on the Lower East Side at Tompkins Square Park 3 days a week. And normally it's 150 people. It's not a problem. He can cook in his kitchen. When all of this influx came, there was practically riots on the line because they were running out of food. People are fighting over it because they're hungry and they can't get, and of course, who knows why they're coming in the first place, but anyway, they're there. And so we don't usually have to cook for that program because we have our own, different aspect. But he said, Prabhu, I can't do it. So now we cook twice the amount that he would normally cook, and we bring it out those 3 days a week so that there's enough to feed all these people so there's no riots, a very unruly crowd.
He's still cooking, though.
He's still cooking also. Yeah, he's still cooking. Plus we cook. So lots of opportunity in every respect to serve everyone by prasadam, by the holy name, by introducing them to the philosophy. Yes, that's good. Anyone who wants to can come. It's food for life, free. And there's, like I said, hundreds and hundreds more than normal. You'll see. So. But Columbus Circle, that's a new place. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I'd like to comment on the black and white issue. Black being the lower class and white being the higher class. I was always taught that people born in India are not ordinary souls. And it seems to me that they would understand about Krishna's blackish form, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead in India. But yet they have the caste system where the lighter people are prejudiced against the blackest skinned people. And I wonder how that's possible, being the holy Dhamma, that people are
in the bodily conception of life, you know, just stuck there.
Because they didn't have the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. That was, you know, they were covered over by so many, by the impersonalist philosophy, by the Buddhist philosophy, where everything is emphasized as external, the caste system, the different rewards for pious or impious activity. Everything was meant to maintain a certain social balance. My wife mentioned the same thing, you know, when we were reading the purport together, said that, yes, Krishna, yeah, we have Krishna Balaram. We have Radha Shyama Sundar. Most beautiful lordships. Are there any more beautiful personalities? No. But we see that Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochana. So that Premanjana is not the same way we view the material world, but in one sense, it gives us a reference, how we can understand things in the proper perspective. And another interesting thing, thank you, Manji, for that comment and question. In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 4th and 5th verse, Prabhupada defines intelligence as being able to understand things in their proper perspective. And so this perspective is not always available to everyone. And so we're very fortunate to have that. And especially coming in this line of Lord Chaitanya, he was also ridiculed and belittled and ostracized by the mainstream, you know, because of his actions. They didn't look at his character. They didn't look at his at what he was actually doing from an intelligent perspective. They just saw someone who was a threat to the status quo. So there's differentiation, whether it's in India or in America or any place. It's also used by unscrupulous persons to try to maintain a certain status quo. And of course, if you don't allow yourself to be put into that category, then nobody can, define you. You know, this is the point. We escape that, you know, by our own level of spiritual progress. And it may not be there in the beginning, but at a certain point, everyone has to feel himself well-equipped. This is the Kanishtha, and we could say that a lot of these people who are dealing in those days, they're all Kanishtha Adhikar. And what's the definition of the Kanishtha Adhikar? Is that he doesn't understand how things are from the philosophical perspective. He's more of a person who's guided by tradition, you know, or ritual. And we've seen that in this tradition and or ritual, there's very little perspective. It's all very narrow, closed. You could say it's almost like a cult. You know, and cult in one sense has some negative connotation, but Prabhupada also turned that word around. He said cult means culture. So you have to understand what is the culture before you can make negative assignment to the word. You know, people will still say that we're a cult, you know, without understanding. But now this culture has spread to the far reaches of the globe, including Russia, including China, in a hidden way in the Muslim countries, right? In Iraq, in Iran, all these places, in Saudi, in the UAE, all these places. Krishna is there. And in some of these places still, they'll kill you if they find out. You know, so there's still work to be done. Yes, ma'am.
Of course, we understand what the bodily conception of black and white is, but could you help me understand what spiritual black and white is?
Well, we understand it from here that, in one sense, good and evil. If you logically progress that thought, then what we're, at least in context with the other verses in this particular chapter, we see that this relates to the way a person takes birth. Suchinam, Shunatam, Gehe, Yoga, Brastak, Prantapadet. A person takes birth in a pious family due to his past pious activities. And a person takes birth in a different type of family according to his impious activities. Otherwise, this is a very big sticking point for many in the material world, why they reject God. Because how can God be so cruel to be putting people in such a poverty-stricken condition or some disaster, disease-ridden area? What kind of God is that? He's obviously not very equitable, right? This is the big thing nowadays, equity. You know, everybody's trying to bring everything down to a common denominator, but it's not possible. You know, what do they say? Equal opportunity, but not equal, results. It's not there. Everyone has the same opportunity to become Krishna conscious, but not everybody will take it up, and not everybody will succeed for whatever reason. You know, but we understand that Maya, back to this point here, so in context, it's speaking about the differences in good and evil in one sense. The Bhagavad Gita is speaking about the divine and demoniac. It doesn't say black and white, but we understand from the context here that that's what it means. You know, when a person is called black-hearted, doesn't have anything to do with his external skin color. Has to do with his nature. So we have to understand that and hopefully have the proper perspective in all of our dealings. And that we should be white-hearted, not black-hearted. Pushkar has his hand up, Mr. Carnival. Oh, wait, there's another question. Take your cue, take your ticket there.
Thank you for your wonderful class and just listening to your preaching. Actually, I have a little story I want to tell about black and white. We were coming back from preaching one day, and they had a black crowd, and they were saying that, you know, preaching about white and black racial problem. So I just got out from the train station. I came upstairs and said, "Oh yes, here's a Hare Krishna. Let's hear what she has to say." And I said, "I don't know what the big problem is." I said, "You've been to our temple? Krishna is black. Radharani is white." I said, "We have no problem with color. We just worship Krishna whatever form he takes, and he has a black form." And he looked at me and said, "Hare Krishna always have an answer, don't they?"
I like that.
But okay. It was funny. I just came up and just, you know.
Yeah, we have no problem with color.
Yeah, it was funny that. The political situation. When I go out there, so they're always talking about the illegal immigrants coming. So it was nice to hear that the devotees are taking care. They're not getting into the political situation, just feeding them and preaching to them. Prabhupada's program. That was nice to hear.
Krishna's always making arrangements to expand preaching.
Yes, it's always, yes. Devotees see the situation so differently from the political situation. I was, you know, trying to corrupt and do this. But devotees are always trying to just bring their lost soul home. So that was nice that we had this preaching, this food distribution program, feeding everybody. I think Prabhupada would be very pleased with that.
I think he's pleased with all the devotees who are sticking to his mission. I don't see any difference here. In different places, it's different. But
I was just saying, it's hard not to get caught up sometimes in a political situation because it's all over the news and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still good to step away from that situation and just remember there's souls. Yeah, so we have to preach and we have to continue.
So
we'll give a Bhagavad Gita to anybody.
Yes.
I want to see what you had to say about. So you know, Vishnu Bhakta Bhavya. Viparya, what's the 16th chapter stroke is a little different. Galbhuta Sargo like Kaisman, Vaivasore, Vacha, like that. So, you know, that's a simple, the Bhagavad Gita is ABC, right? So, but later on, we read Bhagavatam and we hear Ishvara Ekada Dine Shu Balasya. There's four. If you're a Madhyam or aspiring Madhyam Adhikari, then you have to see four things, you know. It's preferable for the devotees, it's recommended. Now, because it could engender us this kind of like, you know, we've seen this kind of analysis from other people outside this, not outside anywhere. Oh, you're, you know, they think that too. Muslims think, Hindus are all demons. But, you know, this is a Swami, well, he's citing the verse, but the 11th canon verse, each of it has four categories, you know, because most so-called religions, so-called anybody, they don't have this subtle gradations. They don't think like that, but we should, as aspiring Muslims. Each of it has a demon, she will bother the innocent, innocent, not that, oh, you're a demon, immediately, no. This is a potential devotee, it's innocent.
My experience, and I can, we can say that, that outside of the Krishna conscious movement, we don't see this this harmony. You know, I mean, just people like the example of the in Islam, they'll accept anybody who converts, but they still categorize them by ethnic divisions. And so you'll see that if you look carefully and closely, you'll see who can represent them and who do they segregate. So I've not seen, like I said, my best experiences in the early days were from before joining, were meeting devotees from different backgrounds and being so impressed by their scholarship in Bhagavad Gita, not by their academic scholarship, but by their grasp of the philosophy and their ability to communicate it according to my level, which was not very high. And to convince me, ultimately, to join, to move in the temple. And these devotees, who comes to my mind, who saw me as, you know, who I might not have been the easiest person to preach to. I was long-haired. I was into martial arts. I was obviously, you know, puffed up in the Bali concept. And but Archer Tipuru made sure that whenever I came to the Sunday feast, that he grabbed me, continued the conversation from the previous time, and took it to the next level, and to the next level. And of course, there are many devotees who are preachers there, who I felt my ethnic background is I'm half Asian and I'm half American. So, you know, when I was growing up, that was not a very, you know, biracial marriages were not very common. And so there was certainly some prejudice, but I never felt myself in an awkward position because I had some confidence, maybe false confidence at the time. But I see that that's always the case with anyone. If a person is confident and sure of himself, then nobody can put you down. It's not possible. I think Eleanor Roosevelt was the one who said it, that, you know, the only person who can put you down is the person you gave permission to do so. You know, so we're all in a similar situation, materially or spiritually, but spiritually, I said, I never had any bad experiences. I never met any prejudiced devotees, except for this guy with the swastikas in Rakhya, and we took care of him. and he was just
Roy,
a nonsense.
Roy Bhanachari called him.
Huh?
The guy named Roy Bhanachari called him.
I don't know what, I didn't get into the details. We just grabbed the guy and just kind of like, you know, moved him out. Said, you don't belong here.
People are taking birth, it's actually according to the past karma, you see, you know.
Yeah, but you can't tell a person that. And we don't look at it like that. We look at it as equal opportunity. That we don't care how you took birth or who, why. You know, we preach, there's, you know, this is, I think, from my perspective, and that's, you know, I'm just one person, that we're open to preach to everyone. Sometimes we're a little criticized that we're a little too liberal. You know, occasionally we've had some people come in who weren't playing with a full deck. you know, and it didn't, wasn't obvious immediately, and it only came out after a certain point. So, but we took the time to give them prasadam and to speak with them. And if it turned, at least they got prasadam, maybe they had darshan of the deity, and, you know, then they, better life, better luck next life. We have, you know, we do, security in New York is always a concern. One of the reasons they wanted to sell the temple initially, but time and circumstance. Toshan and Krishna and myself, we scattered the neighborhood. This temple, you know, this is the one building that met our budget, and this is 1982. So we went there one evening after looking at it in the day and walking around, seeing this is, you know, it has everything we need and more, practically speaking. Big space, it needed work.
Bingo
was there, but we didn't. We still had the access to it on the weekends. He said, let's go in the evening. We want to see what the neighborhood's like at night, right? That's what you do. You go to a neighborhood at night to check it out. What's the real, is there danger? I mean, there's no question. Just like there's a negative connotation back in the day associated with housing projects. Why? Because that's where all the poor people, less advantaged people live. Okay? And not always following the rule of law so closely. You know, so they were, and where's their natural, they needed to come and they needed to execute their activities, they would come to more to the downtown area. And so there was, devotees would get mugged, but this is later on. We bought the building, okay, so when we bought the building and talked to the people in the neighborhood, they said, well, it's a nice neighborhood. At night there are some problems like that. You know, and you can see from the all the ground floor windows have bars on them. So you know there's a concern. But, you know, and we told them who we were. We just showed them, said, we're thinking about moving in the neighborhood. We didn't tell them where the Hare Krishna is. You know, we were learning our dhotis. But we had parked in front of the temple. Okay, that was another thing you couldn't do back in the day. If you parked in front of the temple, they would break into your car, do so many things. So it was not a nice neighborhood.
That's a tradition
in Henry Street. Henry Street was a little different, though. That was
there.
No, they used to burn the cars. I was there when they were doing that. But that's why we had Tiffany Place. That's why we had the garage. Because they would burn our cars. But that was because they weren't thieves. They were targeting us to try to intimidate us. That was Henry Street. At Henry Street, that intimidation stopped. When did it stop? The day we walked into the building with 5 shotguns. Okay, the intimidation at Henry Street stopped. Because they knew. They're throwing cherry bombs through the windows. Yeah, it was hellish.
But some of them got dead.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
That didn't stop them.
No, it didn't stop them totally. But like I said, once they knew that we had the will to do it, and then they saw the shotguns come in.
That was before your time.
Yeah, it was just before. So anyway, so there are all these different things that are going on. The warriors have lots of stories about the temple. So on the way back, so we had parked the car by the temple, walked to this neighborhood, which is on the other side of Atlantic Avenue. Well, one is the first block is State Street. So that's before Atlantic. We walked down there. And when you walk by, we walk by this building, and it looks a little institutional. You know, it was a 7-story building and brick, and it had that look to them, you know. But we didn't know what it was. And on our way back, the same route we came, we saw that there was an EMS, emergency services truck there, and a police car, and then there was a sheet draped over a body on the sidewalk. This is the first time we're going there at night. And we thought to ourselves, oh, this is another interesting aspect about this neighborhood. And so we stopped and we asked the cop, we said, what happened? He said, oh, it's just another night in the neighborhood. And I said, what do you mean? He said, no, this is it. He said, you don't know what this place is? I said, no. He said, it's a halfway house for mentally challenged people who who are semi-independent. But this guy had thrown himself off the roof or out of a window and committed suicide. And so that was, so then we know.
Huh?
Well, that the point is, well, here it is that, you know, we still closed the deal on the building, though. That's the point. And then Krishna miraculously turned the whole neighborhood around. So now it's one of the most desirable neighborhoods in New York City of the five boroughs.
That's because of the Gowanus project.
One is the Gowanus, not just Gowanus, up and down the block from us. Every place that used to be a parking lot is now a 50-story apartment building. Gowanus? No, Gowanus. You should see the project at Gowanus. Yeah, well, your project. I'm just telling you. Huge. So anyone who comes who wants to see what's going on in New York, you'll see the transformation. There's a building. I call it, it's 93 stories. It's one of the tallest buildings in New York, and it's in Brooklyn. We're at the site of the Dime Savings Bank, which is a landmark. They couldn't destroy the landmark dome, so they took the whatever space was left, and they built this needle 93 stories tall.
On top of the dome?
No, next to it, adjacent to it. The dome is now the lobby. 93 stories. And it's, the building is black in color. It's dark. It's a dark dome. And it looks like, if anyone has seen, of course I've seen because I have kids, that's my excuse. It looks like in The Lord of the Rings, a Tower of Sauron.
His office is in.
Huh? I don't know. It's a mixed use. It's all mixed use. It's all offices and residential. Oh, it's residential. The penthouse on the top, one of the most expensive penthouses in New York. $8 million. This is Brooklyn. That's the penthouse. $8
million.
Huh?
Overbuilt
it? I don't know who built it, but it's just amazing. The thing is, if you go online, you look at that, you can see, because there's an offering. You can look at the pictures. And they advertise it. You can see three states, you know, from the top of this building, out of the penthouse, and you see everything. And so they're selling it. Florida ceiling windows, $8 million. In any case, it's from Dime Savings Bank is two blocks away. You know, right down through Albee Square. Fulton Wall.
No dollar saved, just dime saved.
They have some cheap stuff.
Still.
Down on
the
No. Anyway, the point is, and thank everyone for taking the time to listen. And yes, New York and Alachua are very closely related. Many devotees who've been in New York, been to Alachua, it was my good fortune to be able to come and help to establish a community, and I'm eternally grateful to their Lordship Shri Gaurinathai for their shelter and mercy. And and everyone is welcome to come and help us push on the next level of urban preaching. We're planning on, so in case before Shesha leaves, we'll tell that the building next door, the bingo hall, it's only one story, so we want to break that down, just tear it down, demolish it entirely. Go down two levels, because all the other buildings on our block go down at least two levels. The subway is in the street, not underneath us. And on one level, we'll have a parking garage. And then you have your basement, which is usually your physical plant. And then we'll have the ability to build, we can build up to the existing square feet, which would put us at 14 stories. 14 stories. It's 127,000 square feet.
Don't you need more than one level of parking?
No, not for our purposes. There's other places around. If people want to drive you, just in that spot down below, the way they have parking structured, the way they build it now, they have these hydraulic lifts, you fit double high. You can fit 40, 50, 60 cars in that space. That's 7,500 square foot. That's a lot of space. Each floor is 7,500 square feet.
Huh? It's under the bingo and the regular building.
It would be under the bingo. No, just under the bingo. Just under the bingo. Anyway, this is a prospectus just to encourage people what the potential is The potential in New York is to have a building almost twice as big as 55th Street, square foot. 55th Street was 11 stories with two basements, but 77,000 square feet. This building will be 14 stories with 127,000 above ground and 15,000 below. $3.5 million.
So there's several, if you add up all the condos, a lot of the whole building is worth.
Look at it this way. If our building in Brooklyn, our plot, just our plot, people who wanted to buy this property, they didn't want it for the buildings, obviously. The reason they wanted to buy it, first of all, it's not landmarked, so they can tear it down. And they were willing to pay, at that time, 10 years ago, $60 million. 10 years ago. So, what do you think the value is now of this property? We have people who are regularly offering us above $80 million. But they're thinking we want to sell. We don't want to sell. Hard to say. You know, if it's co-op, you can't tear it down because everybody decides to sell it. But anyway, we digress a bit here. But New York has a lot of potential, just like Alachua has expanded beyond anyone's. If you would have told somebody who was living here in 1990 that this will be the largest community outside of India, no one would say that. No one would have agreed. They would have thought, how is it possible?
Anything is possible.
How is it possible? So in the same way, New York is meant to be a skyscraper for Prabhupada. Right, Chesha? Okay. Anyway, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, all glory to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glory to the merciful Lordship Sri Sri Gaurinitai, Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundara, and Sri Sri Krishna Balaram. Purantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki.